Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our On the Time Lash Extra for Heaven Sent. I'm Ben.
I'm Mark. Hello.
And we're in a different locale again. We're both back together again in Edinburgh, and we're in the Kilderkin pub on the Royal Mile, a place we've never recorded before.
No.
So we weren't quite sure of the soundscape.
Yeah.
So as we're talking just now, we're not quite sure how intrusive the music in the background is or is not.
It may be, you know, Ben and Mark fight with the hits of the 80s. Whereas the Doctor was menaced by a shuffling grey veil, we're currently menaced by Gary Newman, which is slowly following us.
Well, if you're going to be menaced by anybody, that's not so bad, really, is it? I mean, it's not that they don't do terrible music in here, which is good, so it's not going to be too much of a problem. But, I mean, we're here, we're heaven sent.
I know.
What an episode.
It's, I think I think I kind of summed it up on Twitter quite well, I think, if I can say so myself, which was Doctor Who's bold.
There's a troll podcast somewhere else going, that Mark, what a dick, what a dick he is.
What a fanny.
Pure bums Moffat, mate.
Well, I was just caught up on last night's bold, brilliant, you know, extraordinary Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It's quite good, wasn't it?
That was alright, wasn't it? Yeah.
And last night it was just... It's funny, because I think, you know, when it was first announced that you've got, it's going to be 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Peter Capaldi by himself. And not to denigrate any other Doctor.
Yeah.
I think there was something when I first read that, I was like, well, obviously.
Yeah.
I've never thought of that ever happening before.
Yeah.
As a Doctor. But with, you know, he's an actor, I think, that can pull it off.
Yeah.
And he did, I think.
Could you... This might be cruel, so it might not go into the edit. Jesus, can you imagine if it was Hartnell doing a full episode to himself? I know what you mean. I can't really imagine the other... that was a bit cruel. I can't really imagine the other Doctors doing that.
No.
I think because of the tragic nature of the story...
Yes.
I just don't think it would have... fit.
Tonally, it wouldn't fit in with Tennant.
Yeah.
That sort of RTD, sort of colourful, exciting, adventure-y series. I don't even think it would really fit in with Matt Smith. And it was funny, I started thinking, actually, halfway through, that it's interesting that in series 6 to 7, what Moffat's very concerned with in terms of the themes in the show is parenthood.
Yeah.
And what that entails, and the sacrifices you make as a parent, or the lessons you impart as a parent.
Yeah.
And then kind of series 8
legacy.
Kind of thing. And series 8 and series 9 are very preoccupied with death.
Yes, they are, aren't they?
There's this kind of this deathly pall that just falls over a lot of proceedings, and there's stories that kind of deal with, because death and Doctor Who have been hand in hand since like the Cave of Skulls, it's been a thing that recurs and recurs. Yeah. Folk die in Doctor Who. That's what happens.
Probably the first death we see is a murder.
Mm.
Or the first death that we're party to is a murder, isn't it? Don't mean to kill the old woman.
I think that's the first death that
hangs over it. But the first death is a murder.
And that continues right the way to 2015. And I think it's interesting that, because, I mean, we discussed this last week, was, he's a writer that gets a bit of a hard time for, death is not the end in Stephen Moffat's scripts, isn't it? And it gives us unhealthy children.
Yeah, nobody dies. There's always an afterlife or a way out or something.
And I think, we're here again. It's a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think what he's kind of dealing with is that it's like, fine, if River Song has an afterlife, there are still people at home grieving for this lost person.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what a lot of Heaven Sent is kind of dealing with, and a lot of what I think Dark Water kind of dealt with. It's like the people that are left behind.
Yeah. You just have to get on with it.
Yeah, you have to get on and you have to do what it is you need to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting, because fine, and that's again with the Zygon two-parter, the whole Osgood's death becomes the most important trigger for the story.
Yeah.
and it's all about what people leave behind. So, you know, fine, they can be living in a virtual reality or whatever, but at the end of the day, there's still people in our reality that are sad that they're gone.
Yeah. And it's about trying to find some sort of meaning on that death, so that they did not die in vain. They may not have had an actual physical thing, but their impact on the lives of other people have hopefully enriched it.
Yeah.
That legacy moves forward, and I mean that's certainly what it is. I mean,
I think the
complaint I had in the last episode about is there not something more in Clara's death?
Yeah,
we got it.
Yes.
In this, she had to be dead. She had to have died very bravely.
Yeah,
very overtly, in order for the Doctor to use her as a way to keep fighting, whether he remembered or not, fighting for 2 billion years.
Yeah.
That was the extra I was looking for, and we got it in this episode.
Yeah.
But we always knew there was going to be elements. Look, I mean, whether this is a three-parter or not, these last three episodes in the season, they are at least linked, and there'll be elements in one that will answer questions in another.
Yeah.
So that's what I was looking for.
Definitely.
So Face the Raven, I now completely understand.
Well, it's interesting because it was never actually the intention for Clara to die at the end of Face the Raven. Face the Raven was going to come earlier in the run.
Okay.
And then when Sarah Dollard handed in her script for it, Stephen Moffat kind of read it and went, oh, actually,
that's the place to do it.
This would work. We'll shift the episode order around.
Yeah.
And it'll happen here. That's exactly the sort of story and the sort of thing that I want
God, imagine if she died in Sleep No More. The fucking internet would break down.
So I find that question.
Oh God, Clara succumbs to like an eye bogey. Jesus, what a terrible thought.
Let's be thankful for a good death, I guess. As weird as that sounds. I think it's about grief. It's about, and that idea of that when you're born, there's something that follows you.
Yeah.
From then until, and that's death.
Yeah.
And that's it's going to come eventually.
It's properly scary.
Yeah.
The veil
is a proper scary thing. And also,
I mean, the whole thing, I mean, like, okay, it's just a guy lumbering around.
Uh-huh.
But this is probably the most atmospheric, truly chilling Doctor Who for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
For quite a while. I'm wondering when, since maybe, like, Hinchcliffe Holmes era?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I know that's quite an obvious kind of thing to cling to, but you're right.
But maybe the God Complex. The God Complex was equally chilling, but I mean, that had a kind of weird modernist feel to it, because it was set in a shit 1970s hotel by the looks of it, rather than like a castle. Rather than that classic Nosferatu. I kind of suggested this when we talked about Face the Raven, but that kind of classic Nosferatu, like 1920s kind of silent
German
movie.
Expressionist horror, yeah. It's,
and Rachel, was it, how do you pronounce her name? Is it Tallulah? I think I've told you this before, as a film buff, the scene. But there is a scene that's directly like something in Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
When the Doctor's at the end of the corridor, when he's first got out into the corridor, he's got the line of "I finally run out of corridor," I've summed up. And they don't show the veil right in your face.
No.
They show it at the end of a corridor.
Yeah.
I always find stuff like that far scarier, when you can visualise the approach rather than the monster scaring you.
Yeah.
There's a bit in Nosferatu where because it's not official,
it's an unofficial
Dracula.
Yes.
So the Jonathan Harker character, there's a bit where he kind of senses something weird's happening one night, and he looks out into the corridor, and rather than the vampire be right next to him in surprise, it's like way down a corridor.
Yeah.
And you've got to look at the scene a little bit before you can actually pick out the small figure, and you just go, that's really scary, because now you can imagine it approaching. And I think that's the secret of the thing. Or that's this one of the successes, is it's properly chilling, because it allows you to visualise so much of the haunting that goes on.
But also, I mean, it opens.
You also never get a real proper look at. You get to see his hands trapped in the door, but the veil, you never get like a proper look at the veil.
Mm.
It's just a suggestion of something. Wearing a cape.
And also, it's just horrible. It's like, it's this kind of, it's essentially, it's an old woman.
It's a dead old woman.
That's followed by flies and it is really, really horrible. And I think, and also, not just that, the fact that it wins. time and time and time and time again.
It doesn't say how long each of these kind of experience, how long these experiences are for each of the Doctor.
Uh-huh.
But if he's there 2 billion years, if the sea is absolutely covered in skulls,
it's been going on long time.
That's a lot of times.
And
I'm going to show up how bad I am at mathematics, rather than giving even a suggestion, an approximation of how much that could be, just going a lot of times. I'm not even going to hazard a guess.
Just that bit where he gets grabbed by the thing and you go, but then the doctor's dragging himself up, his clothes are all burnt and he's got like this horrible sort of like burnt face and you're like, this is seriously doom-laden. Like, how's he going to get out of this? Like,
this is maybe a little side argument. Is it worth broaching in now? Considering what this episode is like, and actually considering what the whole tone of the series is like, would we have even have had this show? Like, and I count myself as a big fan of this episode. Mm-hmm. Would we have had it if Doctor Who was in an earlier time frame? An earlier time slot, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. That's a good point. Because, for all this stuff about, the BBC decided when they were putting Doctor Who on...
Yeah.
Like, quite close to time. I'm not entirely sure that's true.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of ties back to what Stephen Moffat said about that sort of 5-year business plan.
Yeah.
It's as if they kind of know way before it goes on when it's going to be, so what they can get away with, what they can't get away with.
Yeah. Or what they want to do.
Yeah. Because it really feels as if, like, not through this year, certainly. Until less to an extent last year, some of the episodes last year, like maybe Mummy on the Orient Express or something like that. It does feel as if it's, like, just up in the ante just a little bit in terms of horror and in terms of themes.
Yeah.
Because it knows that it's going to be going out at a slightly later time.
Yeah.
And also, like, if you think about it, it's kind of in the old casualty slot when we were growing up as kids. You know, it's like kind of 8 o'clock slot.
Yeah.
Or like where Jonathan Creek or something, like, where you can get away with Jonathan, like, kind of, you know.
But even, I mean, that's not Jonathan Creek. I mean, that's,
well, I remember one episode where, like, the solution was the guy had basically killed somebody, and then just he's like, well, I'm going to get caught and put in jail, so I'm going to just lock, like, you know, he bricks himself up in a wall.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they sort of, like, break it down. There's just this, like, corpse. And so I remember seeing that as a kid going, oh, man, that's cool.
Okay.
And, like, casually, like, folk falling off, and stuff like that.
I don't know. I wonder if there's something with the BBC at the moment where they're trying to save money. So they're taking an existing property, adulting it up in place of commissioning, like, an actual 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock drama. They're just going, well, Doctor Who will do two birds, one stone, as it were.
I think once again, and once again, what we have is a proper alternative to ITV. The BBC are no longer, like, their attitude towards Doctor Who at the moment is it's like, well, we don't need to compete with The X Factor.
Yeah.
The people that will watch The X Factor will always watch The X Factor.
Yeah.
What we want is something properly interesting, properly grown up, properly horrific, and a proper alternative to the kind of cheesy reality show format for the people that don't want to watch The X Factor.
I know we spoke about it in the last little podcast.
Right? Yeah.
This is where I properly take my hat off to the BBC and to Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night.
Yeah.
They've got something that used to be essentially the kind of... And they brought it back the last Christmas when Mark Gatiss did the oh, what's his name, the horror writer.
They did the track to Ian Midoff.
Yeah, I was going to say E.L. James, but that's not M.R. James. Fucking hell, E.L. James.
Mark Gatiss directs 50 Shades of Grey.
But yeah, I mean, it's essentially like that kind of, like, type of Christmas ghost story used in the 70s and 80s. But they're doing it with one actor on a primetime Saturday opposite The X Factor.
Yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't make you sign up to protect the BBC, I mean, I'm saying that the direction of the thing is, because we've seen it a couple of times, we knew about it, we got used to the fact it's our favourite show.
Yeah.
And it's only going to have one actor in it. But what a risk. I mean, actually, genuinely thinking about it, what a staggering risk was undertaken.
Yeah.
And how well did it pay off, I think, immensely.
Yeah.
Even though I did see my well, we always do this, a roundup of internet dicks.
Yeah.
I did see a lot of people who like the first comment on the BBC, like, what did BBC Doctor Who feed? Yeah, what did you think of it?
Stephen Moffat is ruining Doctor Who and needs to be sacked right now.
No, he doesn't. That was brilliant.
My favourite thing about that was I saw one tweet which was Stephen Moffat needs to leave Doctor Who, and then there was like a big space, and then underneath it was, because fucked if he's ever going to talk that.
Yes, I saw that. That was great. But he's right. I mean, yeah, firstly, it was directed brilliantly. Secondly, it was just such a wonderful risk. So
yeah.
To just watch that and to see it pay off so successfully was excellent.
I mean, I'm personally disappointed that the cliffhanger was spoiled by the BBC's synopsis.
I think also... Did they mention it in Doctor Who magazine as well?
I don't know, I didn't read the preview of Heaven Sent.
Right, okay.
But I just remember seeing the synopsis and it's like, you know, oh, and if he succeeds, Gallifrey is on our side. So all the way through watching it, going, oh, they'll mention that at some point quite soon.
Yeah.
And then there's a suggestion that he knows what's on the other side of the diamond wall.
Yeah.
So at that point you go, all right, it's Gallifrey. And then you spend like the next 15 minutes, rather than enjoying what's happening, is Gallifrey going to turn up soon?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, you shut that, but there is just a small part of your brain that, because you've read that and you know what's happening.
Well, I mean, I knew it was Gallifrey, but I thought it was going to be, because I knew that the Sisterhood of Karn were going to come back.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was going to be another kind of like standing on the side of the wall, like the time of the Doctor, like you will never get back there.
Mm.
But he gets tantalizingly closer and closer each time,
yeah.
You know. So I never thought we would actually end up...
Ah, right, okay. It's just a funny one. I don't know why they thought that was a good idea. I mean, I guess marketing, maybe they go, we'll bring people back in.
Making sure. I mean, there's a lot of people saying the same thing as us. It's like, are they so scared of the low ratings that they've got to tell people what's showing up in these episodes?
Yeah.
Just go, for fuck's sake, watch it.
Yeah.
If you don't watch it, you'll miss it. It's bad.
Yeah. It was just funny. It's a very small criticism, but I was a bit like, well, that's that fun. I mean, the whole, we'll come to that in more detail in a second, but the actual cliffhanger,
yeah.
You know, that line of dialogue, I was like, and then I immediately went, oh.
I can't remember, did we talk about this in the last one, but the whole thing of the hybrid, where it's just suddenly appeared.
Yeah.
And now it's suddenly not the thing we were told about.
Yeah.
The hybrid thing all sounds a lot of bullshit to me.
Well,
that's the only thing that lets this down.
It harks back to that kind of Bad Wolf thing, where it's like, it's a word that's seeded through the whole series.
Yes, but...
And then it goes...
Bad Wolf was for us to find. It was written on the side of the TARDIS.
Yeah, but then when it actually got its payoff, you're like...
Yeah, but now the Doctor is actually telling us, and he's going, wait a minute. This isn't the start of the Time War, mate. Like,
yeah.
Time War has been gone for ages, right? And you've had an awful lot of time to get your head together after it, right? In fact,
he's had billions and billions of years.
Yeah. You've actually put the whole thing right again, right? You saved Gallifrey.
Yeah.
And you're only now going, oh, yeah, by the way, there's a hybrid. It's like, what? And then telling us one thing, right, where we've never encountered this thing before.
Yeah.
Where's a half Time War, half Dalek? Firstly, where does that come from?
And well, then, that was a suggestion.
Then,
maybe.
Yeah, but the Doctor seems to very confidently know that that's what it is, and he's, or at least he's happy to perpetrate that particular myth of it. And then he's going, oh, by the way, no, it's not that.
It's me, which either means it's him, because he's half human, half Time Lord, or it's me, half Viking, half Meyer.
Well, yeah, so do you think that's what it is? Do you think it's me with a capital M as opposed
this
to me
is
as
Stephen,
the,
This yeah. is Stephen Moffat, right?
Yeah.
Now, remember, the name of the Doctor, and everybody was just like... we're going to find the Doctor's name. And then actually what it is, it's like, no, it's a title, and what he's done is flies in the face of the name of the Doctor as a title.
What does it mean
he loves a fucking wordplay.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't immediately think it, but then I just started going, oh no, hang on a minute.
Well, I looked, so usually what I do is obviously watch the episode, but then watch it again with subtitles to get everything.
Okay.
And I... When Coffiers. I got to the end, No. Some of the sound mixes are really
weird.
You
need like a proper fucking cinema sound system to pick everything up.
Or some of the, particularly Jenna Coleman, fires off some of her dialogue like a Gatling gun. Like,
she's
got
a full David Tennant.
She makes Groucho Marx look like he's had a stroke, you know, sometimes. So you need to like properly read what's going on.
Sure.
And I got to the end of this episode looking, is it going to be a capitalised E? Are they going to give it all to M, or are they going to give it away or something?
Yeah, but subtitles it's not the way subtitles work. It's not like Moffat gives them the script.
No, but I wondered if they were going to give it away or not. Sometimes, notoriously, sometimes they have in past series by capitalising it clever enough.
I think it probably will be. I think it would be a bit silly.
Well, what's the Doctor going to be a hybrid of? Are they actually going to go back to the half-human thing? Because that's bullshit. Because
I think that's what it is. Moffat teasing, and then it'll actually be Maisie Williams.
Yeah. Well, she is back in it. Yes. She's going to be in the next one. And she is too. She's a Viking. And then she was given her longevity.
Two warrior races.
So,
I'm very interested. I mean, I don't... Other than the two trailers... Which don't really give you that much hints. It's like, oh, there's a Gallifrey, there's some bad stuff going on, there's a regeneration, there's a big warship thing. He's in what looks like a Wild West, like Gallifrey's gone all Wild West town.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's another thing. What is this fucking thing on the internet with spoiler-free reviews from websites? It's still a spoiler. You're deciding I was about to say something, I went, no, probably you don't want to know, and neither do the audience.
Okay.
Now, largely it means nothing. It's nothing you haven't already seen. It's just clarifying it, what you've already seen in the trailer.
Yeah.
He's like, but what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
It's just too much spoiler, or kind of like previews of things.
But the thing is that, because of that, there's like really weird reactions to stuff. Like, I remember... When they had that first shot, the Christmas special, a couple of days ago, Peter Capaldi with like a new Sonic like River Song, and it was like, oh, we're also Cleese and it's Greg Davis and Matt Lucas will be in it, and people were like, oh, spoiler. Is that a joke, or just about the fact that it's River Song, or are you actually annoyed that you didn't have the appearance of the comedy actor Matt Lucas appearing on your screen?
Why are people getting het up by the names of the guest actors? Isn't the fact that we know that the central character in the TV show coming up for the finale is not in danger?
He will
get out of this alive and in his current form. You know, we know that something happens, he's fine.
He'll be alright, he'll be okay.
And he gets out and goes to his wife again. So, that's a lot of bullshit. Right, and they're getting annoyed that fucking Matt Lucas is in. And to be quite honest, because they always do at Christmas, they do cast an awful lot of kind of light entertainment actors.
Yes, yeah.
And in previous years, like, was it Bill Bailey?
Arabella Weir.
Yeah, and Arabella Weir. And he'd like.
Were,
yeah, and they were just like.
Just comedy.
10 seconds.
Minors or something like that.
It doesn't matter. It could literally be anyone. You know, like, do you remember when Bella Emberg was in Love and Monsters? I remember Doctor Who magazine, and they approached the Love and Monsters, gave this big kind of half page of all her credits, because she was big in the 70s and 80s. And then all she does is, oh, you're looking for Jackie Tyler, aren't you? That was it. It could have been done by literally anybody. So it doesn't matter, but So anyway, so getting off thing, I think the main thing now to look at is... The writing in this is exceptional. Moffat, Stephen Moffat, let's not give him his abusive name, let's give him his full Stephen Moffat.
OBE.
People have said it. Yeah, he is OBE. People have said it, and this is another episode where the writing is absolutely, it's more than just absolutely cracking. It keeps you guessing to the end, and you have to go back and watch it again. Because there are certain... Right, so I had to watch it again, because I didn't quite... Okay, I don't want to say I didn't quite understand it. I don't want to join the legions of idiots and stuff. But there are certain scenes which... the revelation of what is happening to the Doctor is different to the revelation of what is happening to us. So
So
you have to watch it again to work out how the Doctor realises what's happening to him, as opposed to how we've seen it.
Yeah.
Because more information is revealed in scenes earlier where we don't know what he's doing. You know when he's in the TARDIS for the third time?
Uh-huh.
And we think, I think probably, he's thinking about, I feel it every time, we think he's talking about Clara's death. And
yeah.
To what extent he is. But we're going, what does he mean? What does he mean yeah. by I don't want to feel it? Why can't I just lose? Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? It's, he's got more information than us as a viewer.
Uh-huh.
So we seem slightly baffled. And that's when a lot of viewers will go, well, fuck it, I don't care. But I don't want to be baffled. I want everything explained to me. And that kind of thing is just... He's firing all cylinders. Utter confidence, mm-hmm. utter brilliance of a writer, in that he's, by giving you nothing, giving you everything to keep you invested in the story.
Yeah.
Absolute masterclass.
And just, it's just how he...
I don't know if I fully explained
I know
that,
what you mean.
But you know.
I know what you mean. I know.
The Doctor clocks what is happening to him before we do.
Yes.
So he gets to indulge in this dialogue that seems a little strange and odd to us, and largely seems like it's filled with no information.
Well, because what I thought that meant was that he doesn't want to find Gallifrey because he knows the consequences of that.
Yeah.
And he just kind of wants to just go, no, look, I give up.
Yeah.
I know what's going to happen. We'll just leave this. But actually what that means is he's like, he can't bear to go through it again. Like being like, No.
So no, the reason he can't bear to go through it again is that he can't bear to make the choice.
Yeah,
he can't bear to be in the position. Because ultimately he wants to find Gallifrey.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to give whatever information to whatever listening parties again, I suppose that's that you have this kind of pre-knowledge in your head, so you go, well, that's obviously why he's making this decision, or that's what he's referring to. In another way, I also thought that maybe he said, when I feel it every time, is that he was saying he feels every loss of a companion every time,
and
he doesn't want to finally admit that Clara's gone, like he's finally admitted that everyone else before that point is gone, which maybe he is, maybe he is thinking of that, but what it actually means is he doesn't want to have to make that again. This is what we're
I mean, it's really depthy that's not a word,
dense, but again, like the fact that like I could easily watch that a third or fourth time
because
there's still more to pick up
and I think it's just incredible that Stephen Moffat, and we've talked about this a lot, maybe more in person actually than on the podcast, because we're still rooted in the RTD era in terms of the regular run of podcasts.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's face it, as much as we both enjoy the RTD era, it's very much a template.
Yeah.
Each year on year on year.
Yeah.
And sometimes you will get like a little unique episode like Midnight, for example.
Sure.
I think that's quite a good one to kind of compare with this, actually.
Yeah.
But Stephen Moffat is just constantly going, right, I'm bored with that now. What what else can we do?
Yeah.
Which is why
when was the last time we had a celebrity historical?
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last time?
Robot Sherwood?
Yeah, maybe.
But then does slightly that count? Subverts
does that count really?
So I mean, it's just like, how the hell do you still have new ideas and new ways you want to go? And maybe it's a case of a writer being reinvigorated by a new actor to write for.
Possibly, right? Yeah.
You know, because I think casting somebody as experienced as Peter Capaldi, somebody who, I mean, you know, you look at all his roles, all the way, you know, from like local hero to like in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Those are two completely different characters.
Yeah. The love interest in the Vicar of Dibley.
Yes, yeah.
to the Doctor.
He's just constantly changing, constantly shifting. So why wouldn't you write something that just puts him on show and just shows what you can do?
Well, if you're going to do... So they made not a big thing, but it was pointed out in a lot of kind of pre-press for this episode. The only time there's been like a TV monologue before this point really was the EastEnders episode with Doc Cotton. And in a way, it's a similar ground. The thing is, Tennant and, I mean, obviously pointed out in the Day of the Doctor, but Tennant and Matt Smith's incarnations are very flippant. They're very jokey.
Yeah.
If you're going to have you're going to have a full episode with only one actor, it can't be a flippant story.
No.
It can't be silly. It can't be... What you have with Capaldi is this older... I don't want to say more tragic, but more... You know, like his face shows a lot of the hardship that that character, the Doctor,
absolutely,
has through his life. You know, it's not until you had an actor like Peter Capaldi that the kind of the real meaty sort of... I don't
Keep
know
going.
If that's a guy with a saxophone next door, or that's
this
actually on the soundtrack.
Smooth jazz Doctor Who criticism.
But it's not until you get to Peter Capaldi that you actually have an actor who can really do justice to an episode like that, because it needs to be weighty and meaty. It needs to be this needs to be a treaty on the purpose of life and death
in
the lives of others, you know, and this is what this is.
I know, and he just does it brilliantly.
Yeah.
And I like the kind of... Because obviously there's little bits, like, you know, we have Jerry Coleman back briefly.
Yeah.
And it's a little side...
Boo, cheat. He wasn't a one-hander. And the veil was in it. Boo. Moffat out. He's a liar.
Is this the first time Arse has been uttered on screen in Doctor Who?
I saw you speaking to, was it Richie? On Twitter, and he said, is this the first time that we've had arse on TV? And I was like, what, ever? Oh my god, imagine if it was. And I started thinking back, going, maybe it was. Maybe I just presume that arse has been on TV before. But it's not, this is the first time. Is that the first time we've seen arse on Doctor Who?
It must be. Because I remember just going, oh.
Yeah.
Like, not in any way offended, but just be like, oh, there's a word I didn't expect to hear, Doctor.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I don't know why people don't keep buggering on a bit more. You know, people don't make a big more of a thing about it.
Yeah.
Churchill says keep buggering on.
That was Churchill's catchphrase, wasn't it?
Well, it was, yeah. But, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, buggering has only ever had the one meaning.
But no, I mean, he's incredible.
I think so. I can't think of any other apart from that, although I kind of feel it back in my head, like, there's got to be something in the Pertwee era. There's got to be something in the Pertwee era, isn't there? Like when
just the third Doctor coming in and going, oh, you're an ass.
Something like that, yeah. I can just imagine, like, any kind of pen.
You're an ass, Lord Peregrine, whatever, from Whitehall.
Yeah. Some sort of...
You're an ass, Professor Stallman. An ass! No, Pertwee would come up with something a lot more flowery than just calling somebody an ass.
Yeah. Well, is arse this generation's ham-fisted bun thing?
What an incredible showcase. I think this series in general actually has kind of shown every possible facet of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor.
Yeah.
It's really kind of taken him on a... Don't say journey.
But
he's showing, because everybody was like, oh, he's a bit dour, he's a bit grumpy, he's a bit unpleasant. But this, we've seen him like the fun, like embarrassing dad. We've seen him, you know, the sort of adventurous hero. We've seen him the scientist. We've seen him the peacemaker.
Yeah.
And now we've seen him this grieving old man who feels alone and scared. Like, it's not often we see the Doctor scared.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. It is really, really incredible. And I think and building.
And even when he is, I mean, I like that there's certain things he's, you know, there's not a lot of scared acting that goes on, even when he's saying he's scared.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that he's essentially taking his own advice from Listen. Which is when you're scared, it turns you into a Superman.
Yeah, so you dive out of a window.
Yeah, you dive out of a window. I love that whole scene.
Yeah.
I loved it. I love the Tarzan. I love the whole thing.
Yeah.
I honestly hope that when they do the first 6 decades poll or whatever the next one of this, it's just got to be up there. I mean, it's got to be in the top
5 at the very least.
Well, I was going to say top 20, because there's probably a lot of people that will go fucking, no, I don't like it.
But it's just... Yeah, it's like nothing we've ever... Like, much like Listen was for me. I mean, I can't remember, listeners, you may remember this, because I feel like I went for Flatline as my favourite of last year. But yeah. I do also feel like Listen was definitely up there.
Well, Listen's great. It's got a really little anthology feel to it, because it jumps about so
it's
much.
It's like three different stories almost.
Yeah.
And again, we've got something here that's completely unlike anything we've ever seen in Doctor Who before.
Yeah.
And how great that that's still happening. It's a show that should never rest on its laurels, because the moment it rests on its laurels is the moment it gets cancelled.
The moment...
But that's not quite true.
People keep going, oh, Moffat's tired, the show's tired. It's not. What is the genuine... What is your basis for saying the show's tired?
I mean, I suppose if you're
Sleep No More was a bit... It was a bit of a low point.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be down there with your twin dilemmas and your fear.
I mean,
fear
if that's
house.
The weakest episode, and as I said in that particular episode, if that's the weakest one of the series, we've had a pretty good run.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here.
There's something meritable and interesting in everything that's happened.
Yeah.
One other kind of unsung hero, I think. I don't think we've ever really talked about in all the On the Time Lashes, music.
Mm.
Murray Gold's score.
Yeah.
Fucking exceptional.
I really kind of enjoyed the kind of 80s synth horror soundtrack, but also like almost like Five Doctors style soundtrack as well.
There's a bit of music from every era of the show, it sounds like. But all of it, some of it's just heartbreaking. And that's my whole feeling. The moment I had no idea what was going to happen. The moment that the idea that the Doctor has been doing this for 2 billion years.
Yeah, and it goes through that montage with the... Fuck. Yeah.
And I suppose in a way, you do, if you're invested in a show, you get a feeling at that moment of what the Doctor is going through. You love watching Doctor Who. Right, you consider essentially the Doctor as one of your friends.
He's
a fictional character, but he occupies your thoughts, right? And you watch the show and you give a damn about the character. The realization in your head that he has, those skulls are all his, that he's dying and doing this terrible thing, gives you a momentary sense of your fictional friend dying over and over again. Gives you a momentary sense of what he's going through with his own friend Clara dying.
But also, I mean,
stunning work, absolutely stunning work.
There's two really gut-wrenching bits in Peter Capaldi's Doctor Who for me, right?
Yeah.
And it's, first of all, it's the bit where he's doing that speech to Clara about finding Gallifrey at the end of Death in Heaven.
Yeah.
And he opens the doors, he sees he's not there, and he's just fucking pounding the console.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like recoils in pain.
Yeah.
And then the next bit is the first time he gets to that diamond wall.
Yeah.
And then he starts punching it, and you're like, stop that. Because it's not often you see the Doctor in pain.
Yeah.
And this fucking tortured. It's new ground they're really covering with. And I think it's because you've got an actor with that gravitas that... I keep trying to avoid the word older and more experienced, because that's really insulting to those that have gone before. Just watching him pounding that wall again and again and again, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, you get... It's the most explicit image of how principled the Doctor is.
Uh-huh.
That rather than yield to the torture
any
chamber.
Any more information,
he spends 2 billion years punching his way out, writing little coded message to himself and his all that dust on the floor, presumably is his body, is the dust, is a writing in his own leftovers, just a word to keep him principled and fighting all the way through each of these little mini incarnations.
Yeah.
It's exceptional, and you're right. We're going to have to say the word older, but you know, with Capaldi, what you get is that kind of real print. You know, you remember when all three of the Doctors in Day of the Doctor were standing there basically saying what the Doctor's name was, what he stood for. You have in Capaldi just the one actor now, the perfect example in that one scene of what the Doctor is, which is that you're availed and traversed by all these kind of, you know, fleshy wants and needs and desires and ways out, and then you still go, no, this is what needs to be done, this is the principle, and I'm sticking by it. And I absolutely love it that he's written down the one word, and he could have written down everything.
Yeah.
And I kind of missed it the first time watching it. I thought bird was a slang term for prison, and it was a reminder to him.
Right, yeah, I thought that at first, but then obviously when he starts telling the story, you're like,
it's a reminder to him to keep telling the story. And he's punching his way through, not to get through to the other side.
Yeah.
He's punching his way through because he's determined to finish the story.
Yeah.
So he can do essentially what is a James Bond bon mot that he's so committed to doing.
Yeah.
And it's just he hands off, punched his way to Gallifrey through the other thing.
Yeah. Punching your way to Gallifrey.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a title.
I mean, I guess the next thing as well is that like a lot of people will go, well, what is it? What is he inside? Where is it? What is he doing?
He was inside the confession there, so is that some sort of artificial reality, or is that an actual...
Yeah, well, I mean, are we going to get an explanation? Is it worth talking about this now? Are we going to get an explanation in the next episode? Because I presumed it was... So it was in the confession dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Time Lord technology.
Bigger on the inside.
Yeah. So what is that, a little kind of thing
in
there?
Is it just the Time Lord torture chamber?
Presumably, if it's Gallifrey, I mean, we're actually about to deal with it in the next recording. You guys, listeners, you won't hear it for a while, but we're going to be looking at Trial of the Time Lord.
Yeah.
How many times have we been on Gallifrey where there's the Matrix and it's just a weird little fantasy?
Yeah,
planet.
Yeah.
So was there a kind of weird kind of like half TARDIS, half Matrix?
I think it is.
Front porch?
I think that's it. I think it's essentially what it is. That maybe there's some sort of Time Lord punishment called the Confession Dialogue, which, because it's big on the inside, it is, as he says, a personal torture chamber with all of my fears and all of my, you know, things to get me to talk, to get me to confess to things.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with that until I'm told otherwise.
Well, even if that's all we get, is watch it one more time than you have done. some people on the internet, and it's all explained. It's fine. It's there.
Yeah.
It was excellent. It was honestly excellent.
It was.
There are probably some people who are listening are going to go, well, yeah, but you're going to say that.
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, fine. Here's one little tiny little niggly little criticism in the back of my head where I went.
Was it? Right, can I?
Okay.
Can I get, was it when he brought the Sonic Shades out?
No, it wasn't.
Okay,
no.
I felt slightly the Sonic Shades detracted from
the mood.
From the
perhaps. But that was just so that he can walk through the desert in his sunglasses.
No. When he finally found room 12, and he was walking down the corridor, measuring it with the taps of his hand.
Uh-huh.
And he put the shades on.
Oh, okay.
And
I thought you meant when he put it on when he's like walking through the corridor.
No, that was fine. That was fine. But, no, I don't know why I'm even spending time on this. It was nothing. It was nothing.
But no, it was just that what I would say, if I was being uncharitable, because I don't think it fucking matters. I think it's a great story and it's told very well.
Yeah.
And that climax is stunning. Mm-hmm. It's a stunning piece of work. But you could argue that Moffat... You can argue that Stephen Moffat.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop calling him Moffat. It's Stephen Moffat, right?
Yeah.
That's his bloody name.
Yeah.
Has kind of done this before in terms of, you know, it's like, oh, well, the Doctor's going to spend thousands and thousands of years doing a thing, and isn't that you know,
well,
like,
so
the weight
of
that?
Doctor,
yeah, it's time of the Doctor again.
Okay.
That would be my one little niggle. But do you know what? It's so when it's as good as that, and when it's as well written as that, and as well performed as that, I could not give a fuck.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, but I mean, but any writer has motifs.
Every writer is writing the same story again and again. That's a well-worn, you know.
There's, if we're talking about kind of motifs in Stephen Moffat's writing that are more worrying, it's, you know, grown men encountering people that will become romantically involved somewhere along the line, but as children, you know, I mean...
Yeah, let's not open that can of worms just yet.
Back and visiting...
We'll cover that when we do the 11th hour, maybe.
It's an innocent world, and I do appreciate that. I do appreciate how innocent a world Moffat exists in. Seemingly, you know, like when he bends down and faces the Raven, the Doctor bends down to tie a child's shoe, or when the Doctor can just go up and approach two school children playing in a playground and start yelling at them about, I need your help and stuff.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, I've actually been talking about this quite a lot over the weekend with people, that I've always thought Doctor Who as a programme, and I know there'll be people that disagree with this, that actually I think as a show it gives you, for the most part, a very healthy respect for women, because they're never love interests. It's never will they, won't they, unless you're maybe looking at David Tennant and Billy Piper, or to a very tiny extent until it's completely kiboshed, Matt Smith and Karen Gillan.
Yeah.
And then Matt Smith and Jenna Coleman, that's a different thing which we'll come to in years to come.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's a man and a woman that are friends with each other.
Yeah.
Nothing more.
Yeah.
And they respect each other, and they get themselves out of trouble.
Gain strength from each other.
And isn't that a great message to send out to kids? It's that, you know, like, you don't have to sort of live in these kind of designated boys and girls, you know, yeah. And you must only connect with each other if you want to procreate.
Yeah.
It's, look, we're all in this together. We're all on this wonderful adventure.
Yeah. Oh, the internet. Mark's just said that he wants a female doctor. Basically what you said there. You fucked it, Mark. You've ruined it.
I promised the Polish box we wouldn't reduce ourselves to more hippy dippy peace and love nonsense, but I did it again. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, why is it? Because of our highly successful Dominic Jadun episodes. Fuck you. That changed my whole outlook on life.
But yeah. Shall we just wrap it up there get excited for Gallifrey?
Well, that is the thing. Gareth Roberts, I love going on Gareth Roberts' Twitter after an episode and reading between the lines of his tweets. Although sometimes he is a vert, and one of the tweets from this episode was, to be honest, I've always found Gallifrey the most boring of, and you said it as well.
Yeah, I said, you know, after watching Arthur Infinity, I should be fucking, oh god,
yeah,
really, I'm really excited.
Yeah,
I think, and as somebody pointed out, I think it's Doctor Who thing on Twitter.
Yeah.
He pointed out, it's like, well, that's for us old fans that have, you know, put up with like Arkham Infinity and Trial of a Time Lord.
Yeah,
but for new viewers, it's kind of this mysterious place, and hopefully,
well, 10 years
now, 2005,
yeah, okay, so over 10 years,
this has mentions and glimpses, and
this is the first time he's actually set foot on Gallifrey,
with the exception of David Doctor.
What is the Doctor actually setting? Okay, so when John Hurt's on Gallifrey, it's flashbacks. When the three Doctors are on Gallifrey, are they on Gallifrey, or are they in the painting of Gallifrey?
Oh, they are. No, they're on Gallifrey. No, hang on. But yeah, he raised a good point.
Yeah. I always took it that it was a painting as a representation. It was just a reminder of what they're
trying. But no, because the painting is a moment trapped in time, so that's how they get onto Gallifrey.
Yeah, but it's how they're trapped in the moment, they're not trapped on Gallifrey.
True.
They're hiding the picture.
Okay, but they're still set up on Gallifrey, technically. They're set in a moment that's frozen in time, but they're still set on Gallifrey.
Okay.
But this
okay,
is
but the, again, that's fine.
This is the
that's
first time still, okay. that I think, yeah, you're right, where yeah. it's a proper story.
Like he's home.
Yeah.
And
with the Doctor versus the Timeless. Let's face
this
it.
This is the deadly assassin.
As Paul McGann says in Doom Coalition, the quite frankly, wonderful Big Finish book set, when he lands on Gallifrey for the first time, and he goes, oh, this is my home, and it usually starts with somebody pointing a gun at me.
Right.
And I think that's
that
where we've got
line.
To...
That is a good line.
We've got that to look forward to on Saturday, I think.
Yeah. Well, and we've got the General back. We've got O'Hyla, or Ahila. We've got Donald Sumter.
I know. As who? As the Lord President?
He's
the
Lord President.
Of
Gallifrey. Is it worth just tacking this up? We should have done it at the start, but is it worth talking about Peter Capaldi and Peter Jackson video?
Yes, of course. Yeah, why not?
We're doing it in reverse now, guys. We're doing our Fortnite and Doctor Who, or Weekend Doctor Who.
It looks like a kind of outtake from the and a slightly poorer acted segment from the Five-ish Doctors.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you don't know, and I've no idea where you don't, a video appeared over the weekend of Peter Jackson, and presumably his daughter was
his
there.
Daughter, yeah.
With Peter Capaldi making a guest appearance.
Playing the Doctor.
While Peter Jackson talks about being approached many times by Stephen Moffat to direct an episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It didn't suggest anything.
No, it was just like a fun video, but then it's like, well, why now? Why, you know?
Yeah.
Now the production... Well, in terms of scripts and stuff like that, is entering.
Well, the day
series
it came
10.
Out was there was the day it came out. We were told to watch at midnight for some news about the Christmas special, and the news that came out was that the episode title was going to be called "The Husband of River Song." everyone else had thought it was going to be the announcement that Peter Jackson.
Yeah. Well, I put forward a theory.
Yeah.
That maybe we won't have any Doctor Who next year. The only Doctor Who we'll have is a Christmas special directed by Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
And then we'll have the series in the new year.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I could have thought that as well.
Or
we would have it back in the place that it.
Or maybe they'll have what we've also discussed, where it's going to be like half and half.
Yeah.
And there'll be like a feature length opener or something.
Yeah.
Directed by Peter Jackson, just to kind of put the boot up there.
I mean, look how Ben Wheatley.
That did really well.
I mean, that was exceptional.
I mean, Ben Wheatley's a director I really, really like, and it was great to see what he did with Doctor Who. And Peter Jackson, less so. I refuse for us to do the. Well, it's going to be 3 hours. It's going to be like 6 episodes when it could have been 1. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
But he's certainly a director with, you know, a mastery of that kind of. You look at his old earlier films, like these kind of like really scrungy horror movies and stuff like that. I think him doing a Doctor Who story would be really good. I don't think the Doctor Who that Peter Jackson would direct would be what people would expect. I think they would expect like a big epic adventure, but what they might actually get is something more in line with like Braindead.
Right. Okay.
You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Not in terms of like gore, but maybe in terms of kind of. Who knows?
Well,
if it happens.
You know, he directed The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. He only has the source material to deal with, and if that demands an epic, then that's what you've got to do as a director. I don't think he immediately definitely set out to go, okay, well, we're going
to. But then at the same time, I don't think anybody's setting out to write an episode that they think Peter Jackson. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I think.
Because
Ben Wheatley, although I think Deep Breath is quite in keeping with some of the stuff he's done before, whereas Into the Dalek was not.
Hold on. So I just remembered. So Moffat and Peter Jackson would probably have met because of the
involvement. Yeah, they know each other through Tintin.
Okay. He's doing the next Tintin, isn't he? Because Spielberg had done the first one.
Yeah, if it ever gets made. But that was the plan. It was Spielberg would do the first one, Jackson would do the second one.
Yeah, okay. Oh, well. There's not much to say because there's not much that's come out. And I don't. If he directs it, that'd be nice. If it doesn't, whatever, fine. It's just a funny thing to watch. Actually, it's not even that funny. It's really stilted at some points. Capaldi's a good actor.
Capaldi's great. He's just pottering around the background as
but
the Doctor.
He has to react to two not good actors, like a kid and a director. So there you are. Anyway, guys, that's our heaven sent. Enjoy this. Give it. I don't know. Give it a listen and give it another listen. See if there's any hidden depthies. What do you call it? Depthies.
If it's a very depthy episode. Depthy and make peace.
And we'll see you next week you will hear us next week for
Hellbent. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Probably.
I can't see why it wouldn't be good.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. All right, bye.
Bye.